Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, my fan friends. Welcome to another edition of Rahalastapa. This week with the wonderful and charming Lauren Patterson. Lots of interesting stuff about how lockdown affects comedians in this one. Lots of stuff going on. My radio show Relativity is back on Radio 4 at 11:30 every Friday. Please tune in. You can get it on BBC Sounds. There are links in my Twitter and on my website for how you can listen to the first two series illegally if you wish. I also have a brand new book coming out that I'm just putting the finishing touches to. It will be out on November the 5th. It's called The Problem with Men, When's International Men's Day and Why It Matters. I think you'll like it. It takes you a lot further than the tweets I usually do on March the 8th. But I think it's funny and I think it's got some good stuff to say. I would love it if you would pre-order it, preferably from one of the big places like Amazon or Waterstones. But if you want to wait till it comes out, you'll be able to buy it at Go Faster Stripe and at your independent bookshops as well. But the more pre-sales we can get, the more chance it has of being a success. That is the disgusting nature of the publishing business. I hope you will pre-order that, and even if you don't, I hope you enjoy these podcasts, you motherfuckers. So let's sit back, relax, and enjoy Rahalastapa with Lauren Patterson. Hello, welcome to my lovely attic. Please welcome a man who has not prepared an introduction to himself, because that's insane. He's already here. It's Richard Herring. Thank you. Hello. Hope you're all right, everyone. I'm shouting because I can't hear myself at all. I hope you can hear me. It's good I can't hear myself. That's correct. But we've just had some technical issues before we started, which was very exciting. Nice to see you all in the chat room. Thanks for coming along. We're This is Richard Herring's Let's Start Teaching podcast, because it's time to go back to school, everyone. It doesn't matter if the virus is still out there and going to kill our kids and teachers, more importantly, as long as we try and get back to normality. So I'm going to have to make that difficult decision myself quite soon as to whether my daughter is going to go back to school. I mean, I'd love to get rid of her, but not permanently, you know what I mean? So it's a quandary, and also I'm the most at risk person in this house. So especially since the lockdown, luckily you can only see me from the nipples upwards. I mean, and you know, you can't have bare nipples on Twitch or you get taken off. That's a warning to our guest. Although I was hanging around with the crew of HMS Vigilant, the nuclear submarine, this week, and they call it Rahelastopus. I don't know if that's going to catch on. I genuinely have been talking with someone from that submarine on Twitter, and he asked if I would send some signed emergency questions books because he says people in the Navy love to ask hypothetical questions. Just trying to get my glass. I always do this because I'm always trying to use this as a mirror. My glasses look all skewy. It hasn't helped. They're worse. It's got worse. Yeah, there we go. And he asked me to send some copies of my book. So I've sent them loads of copies of my book to the HMS Vigilant, which is good because it's a nuclear submarine. If there's a nuclear war, it will be one of the only things that survives probably. And so I've got this 50 copies of my book in that submarine. I reckon there's a chance it could become the greatest work of literature from our era, provided there's a nuclear war. So that's, fingers crossed, that's what I'm hoping for. You can buy all three of these emergency questions books at gofasterstripe.com. They're £10 each, but only £20 if you buy all three. So who can say fairer than that? And all the money from that will go to making more podcasts. You can also buy monthly badges. There, look, I'm like Eric Morecambe. What's going on? And you can also monthly badges, gofasterstripe.com/badges if you want to support us on a monthly basis. You can also, if you're with Amazon Prime, you give £5 a month for our Twitch stream if you want. There's the video on our YouTube channel explaining how to do that. So please join in if you can. It's all about the kids this week. I've got nothing except my children to talk about. We were going on a long walk the other day and we saw the moon in the sky in the daytime. It's weird, isn't it? What's going on? It's like a confused owl out in the daytime. And my son loves the moon. My daughter's quite obsessed with it. She was asking how far away it was. I had to look that up on Google. But I wondered if they would ever get to go and step on the moon. There's a possibility, isn't there, that our kids will get to go on the moon. But I'm sure my parents must have thought the same as well. I'm sure my parents must have thought that 1969, I was 2 years old, they'd think, oh, Richard will walk on the moon. I mean, it's not beyond the question. I might hobble on the moon. But will our kids... Look at this. It's ridiculous. What's happened to it? And there we go. It's just, that's it. For people who listen to the audio podcast, this is going to make little to no sense. But I'm having trouble with my glasses. We've had trouble with our headphones. It's all fine. And let's crack straight on. Thank you to everyone who's here. There's 259 people watching. Hopefully there'll be more as we crack on. This is an unheard of thing. I'm recording two Rahelastopas in the same night. It's never happened before. It will never happen again. And this one is going out quite a long way afterwards, the second one. So if you're listening, it's going to be confusing. But I've got a long, long night ahead of me. I'm awake at the moment, which is what I can say. It's 8 o'clock as I'm recording this. The next one's at 10 o'clock. And I don't really stay up that late usually, so that should be interesting. Anyway, my guest this week is probably best known for her appearance on ITV2's The Great Christmas Rant. We know that's why we're here. Will you please welcome Lauren Patterson, ladies and gentlemen? Here she is. Look at that. Hello.
Hello. Hi.
Very on brand, wearing a Newcastle sweatshirt, yes. Hoodie. Fantastic. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad. I'm tired.
You're looking amazing. It doesn't look like you've been in lockdown for 3 months.
No, and today I've been at work 6 a.m. till 5. And look at this.
Wow.
Still smiling. Oh,
that's the beauty of youth.
That's customer fantastic. Service face right there.
And you're in your bedroom at you're staying with your mum and dad through lockdown.
I am, yes.
So you're in, it's not your own childhood bedroom though, it's the bedroom of
your sister's bedroom. My sister's bedroom, and then the second she moved out, I did what every youngest sibling do, which was be like, the box room can fuck off, and I'm finally having more space than I need.
So how is it being, was that a decision you made at the start of lockdown to go back to Newcastle, like a...
A salmon returning to your spawning grounds.
So my tenancy in London was meant to end at the end of March. And I thought, because I had a really like expensive summer, I had 3 weddings, I had the Edinburgh Fringe, and so me and my now ex-boyfriend were like,
oh dear,
tell you what,
there's so much to unwrap here.
That was a loaded ex there, wasn't it? Just in case the people who are listening and not watching can't see the sadness in my eyes. Oh. I'm fine. But we had a really expensive summer, so we were like, well, rather than add the stress of finding a new place to live, we'll both go home for a couple of months, save loads of money, we've got all these nice things over the summer, so we'll still see each other loads, and then I'll move back after the Fringe, and then none of the weddings are happening anymore, so I suppose that's a money saver, but also I don't have a boyfriend anymore and I'm living at home for the foreseeable.
My goodness, it's been brutal. I mean, I think that's, as someone in a relationship, I've thought this a lot. You know, if this lockdown had happened in the mid-90s, mm-hmm. I mean, it wouldn't have been much different than my normal life, to be honest. But also, it would have been so depressing to be single through this. But you've broken up during, have you said?
Yeah. So literally today, this is what I might keep like sneakily looking at my phone. My possessions are currently in a van on the way back from London. Because it's hard to get your possessions back when nobody can drive other than Dominic Cummins. But he went from London.
He could have brought him up,
couldn't
he?
I'm like, Cummins, man, what are you doing? You could have won yourself a voter by driving my cookbooks up.
Oh dear. Well, that's. I mean, you were going to be doing the Edinburgh Fringe this year, were you again? Working on your show.
I was going to be at the Monkey Barrel, dreamy venue. But I'm like, you know what? All this stuff will still be there in a year, hopefully.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. Keep smiling. Well,
hopefully your boyfriend will catch the virus and die, though. your ex-boyfriend. Then it would be a positive point. And at least one person from each marriage could also die, and then you don't have to go to any of the weddings.
Yeah.
No, that's not nice. It's lucky I said that. That's not nice. Well, we'll talk about that a bit more. I don't think I talked to you about ITV2's The Great Christmas Rant the last time I had on, which wasn't too long ago. What was that? What was your take on the Christmas?
That was like my first telly thing that I got to do. That was sort of like comedy. And I think it was the Christmas after I got nominated for the award in Edinburgh. But obviously it films in like, what, September or something?
Yeah.
I got to celebrate Christmas in September, which was amazing. And it was like this sort of car park in East London that they'd done out like a little Christmas grotto with different rooms, and you basically had to write sort of like monologues ranting about different things about Christmas, whether it was like Christmas crackers or your family or whatever. But I loved it because like I'd not done any telly before, so I was like, oh my god, I'm getting my makeup done, I've been given a selection box, and there's fairy lights, like I fucking love TV, this is
yeah, if only it was all as good as that.
I know.
You said the first time you've been on TV doing comedy.
Uh-huh.
Where did you been on TV before? That's my interviewing.
Do you know about my extras technique. Work?
No. I don't know unless you talk about it.
I was an extra on Tracy Beaker.
Okay.
Yeah, when I was...
Maybe I did know.
When I was 18, they rang me up and they said I was going to play a mugger. So I was a walk-on part. That's one above an extra. You get paid more money, and I got a coat when it got cold. That's why they... That's the ladder. And when I turned up, I had like my joggers, because I used to do extras work for another show, which I'll get to. And I know you can sit for a long time around set not doing anything. So I turned up in joggers and like a hooded jacket. And when I turned up, they went, oh, amazing, you've come dressed, which I hadn't. I had not come dressed as a mugger. But what a great way to find out that my general aesthetic is criminal.
Yeah, that is good. So what was the others? What's the other show?
Yeah, it was a show called Wolf Blood, which was another CBBC. This is the thing, when you're an adult who looks young, you get all the CBBC extras work, because they're like, we can work you more hours than we can work a child, but you look like one, which is great. So that was, I did the first series of that. It was like set in a school, and it was about this girl who turned into a wolf, but other people didn't know she was a wolf, and they couldn't find out she was a wolf. And I played just one of the people in the school, but I was a recurring extra or something, which meant like I'd be in the classroom and I'd be in the corridor and I'd be here and I'd be in the science room. So like, that was fun.
Yeah.
That was just before I went to uni.
You started stand up very young. You've been doing stand up for eight. I think I saw you tweet that it'd been your eighth birthday of stand up. Yeah. So in your 20s, so you started doing stand up when you were 18 or 18, yeah.
Yeah, a baby.
So you decided very early on to sort of get into this.
I think that's the thing when you're young, though, is you've got confidence that you don't have as an adult. Well, not confidence, you've got arrogance. Because I wouldn't say I was a confident 18-year-old, but I was like, yeah, why wouldn't I do stand-up? Because I didn't know anything about sort of the world of comedy. So it meant I had no fear. Like, I wasn't scared to try it because I didn't, whereas sort of now as an adult, I'd be like, oh my God, but there's gong shows and you get booed off and there's heckles and there's this. But when I was 18, I was like, this seems fun. Why wouldn't I try this? Like, I just went into it completely blind, but also it meant I didn't have any, one of my first gigs was a gong show. Like, and I didn't even know what a gong show was. I was like, that sounds fun. And they were like, oh, there's a big bell on the stage. And if you're shit, they ring it and you have to leave. And I was like, well, I best not be shit then. Seems the obvious solution here.
Well, it's lucky. A lot of people go on and think they're going to be good. And they are very much mistaken by that. but it's a good way to find. It's a good way to find out if you're, it's not necessarily, you know, I think it's a different skill, isn't it, to be funny with your friends and to be funny in front of an audience. But for your first show to be a gong show is quite intense.
I know, my very first one was then, you know, So You Think You're Funny, the competition. I had the heats of that,
right,
because I didn't know any. I don't know if the Standard even opened then. I don't think the Standard opened in Newcastle. Well, no, maybe it had. No, it just opened, so it hadn't been open long. But I had no idea how to get in. There wasn't really any other sort of like gigs in Newcastle that I knew of. But I saw that competition was coming to Newcastle, and I was like, "Well, I guess that's my first gig." Like, and I didn't see it as, "Oh, I'm entering a competition." I saw it as, "Oh, I'm getting some stage time." And then I got through, and I found out when I was at a festival in Scotland, I was at Tea in the Park, and they rang us to say I'd got through. But I kind of forgot I'd entered because I did it for stage time and not for a competition. So I was like, oh, what do you mean I have to come to Edinburgh? Like, oh, I hadn't quite planned for that one. That was Susan Kalman hosted my semi-final, if
did
I remember
she?
Rightly. And the person who won, I don't think has gone on to do much. It was Aisling B. I don't know if you've heard of her.
Oh, no, I haven't heard of her.
No, she won that year, but kind of just fizzled out, I guess.
Well, that's a very strong lineup straight away. She was a guest just the other week.
She's amazing.
She was my last live guest, in fact.
Oh, really?
I mean, not that they're all alive, but she was the last
what
one.
Have you done
last
to
one
her?
In front of an audience. And since then, I've just murdered every guest. And it's become a kind of murder mystery podcast because they're very popular as well.
So
let's talk. I mean, I partly wanted to talk to you again. I mean, we have spoken fairly recently, the last Fringe. Mm-hmm. But there was an article in The Guardian about you having to cope with suddenly all your work. I mean, you've built this up over 7-8 years and got to this point where you're now, I think you just, have you given up all other forms of employment?
Yes, so I went full-time April 2017. So pretty much exactly 3 years to the day where I lost it. We had a good innings.
So you were working full-time and you had a full diary and then suddenly, and I think this is something that people don't appreciate because they think, when they think stand-ups, they think, oh, Michael McIntyre, you know, Peter Kay, they'll probably have a bit of money squirreled away and get through this. But a lot of stand-ups completely rely on live work largely.
That's the thing. I think so many people like look at TV comics and sort of your big touring comics. And then when they say like, oh, comedians have lost their work, they're like, oh, well, why would I care? Look, they're obviously doing all right. And I'm like, if you think that's all there is to comedy, you are missing so much comedy.
Sure.
Like, there's a whole circuit out there, which is wonderful. But yeah,
it is. But then it's because I kind of got behind this Heckle the Virus campaign that Next Up were doing via Just Giving.
Yeah,
we're doing a sort of closing gig for that charity to try and raise a bit more money on Saturday. If people want to tune into that, there'll be details on Twitter about that. With some Adam Buxton and various other people taking part in it, so it should be good fun. But yeah, that's what I think. I sort of felt like comedians who'd done pretty well out of the comedy circuit should. I really wanted comedians to kind of donate to that, which many of them did.
Yeah.
But it felt like, you know, I realised straight away, I mean, I think all stand-ups did, because I lost all my live work, obviously, that it was going to be very difficult to get through, even if it was 2 or 3 months for us to get through that.
Yeah.
And most comedians don't have savings. Most comedians are living hand-to-mouth.
The whole reason I was moving home for 3 months was to save money for the basically for the Fringe, and so I could rent somewhere a bit now, because I was renting a shithole in London. I had mice in the walls, physically in the walls. It was horrible. The only reason my landlord did something is because I left a note pinned to the door that said I was having a breakdown, and then they fixed it. I was like, right, well, we want to move somewhere a bit nicer. So technically, yes, now I am saving money, but I'm also not earning any money. Well, I am now because I've got a job, but still. So I think I had a few people saying to me, like, oh, that's all right for you. You're living at home. And I was like, yeah, but the plan wasn't to live at home forever. It was to live at home for 3 months. And I would like, when this pandemic is over, to be able to move out and stand on my own 2 feet. And I'm not going to be able to do that if I'm not earning during the pandemic, so that's why I went. And do you want to see my high vis jacket? I got it worked.
I do, yeah, yeah. So where are you working?
I'm giving away my bottoms on there. Oh no.
Okay. Enjoy yourself. I'm wearing joggers.
This proves how much I miss being on stage and being the centre of attention, because I got given this at work today and I was like, oh my god, this is the best day of my life. I've got a high vis jacket. Feels so important. I have to wear it every time I go outside.
Okay.
I think I look great in it.
It's nice. It's very nice. Yeah. And will you get to keep that after the job's over, or do you have to give that back?
I am not giving this back. Okay. No way.
Always just lose it.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's, I suppose there's no real alternative to going back to work, but it's, I think that would feel, again, I think to a lot of people watching would think, well, that seems like a weird move to go back and work in the supermarket.
Yeah.
But did you do that? Have you done that kind of work before?
That's the thing. I always worked up until the point where I went full time. I worked like bars. I worked in restaurants. I worked in shops. I've always worked to support my comedy. And I think I don't want to play if I just take that working class chip off my shoulder for a second, but I think I've always had that mentality of like, but if I want to do this, I have to work for it. And when I first started to get paid gigs, even if it was a shit gig, I would calculate how many hours I would have had to work in the pub to earn that thing. Yeah. So if it was a 40 quid gig, and say if I was only making 20 after travel, I'd be like, yeah, or would you rather work 3 hours in the pub? And I'd be like, no, I'd rather do the comedy. So I think I've always been very appreciative of doing comedy, because I know that the alternative is long hours in a job I hate. So I was like, but yeah, even the worst gig is better than the shortest shit shift I did in a pub or whatever. And I always used to say, like, what, the second I went full time, I don't think this is just a work class thing, I think this is a general low self-confidence comedian thing. I was like, someone's gonna take this all away from me one day. I just know it. Like, this is such a fragile industry and it could all disappear one day, so I'm never gonna be complacent, never gonna like get ahead of myself. And if anything ever happens, I will go and get a job. Like, if my diary empties for whatever reason, if I get sick or something and can't gig, like I'll go back and get a job. So I think that's why I was quite like, the second I did lose all my work, I was like, right, guess I'm going to get in a job. That's fine.
Yeah,
that's brilliant. It
has to be done, but it's, you know, it's sort. Hopefully, it'll be a short-term thing. But there's no real way of. I mean, there isn't. When I got my Leicester Square Theatre gigs cancelled, they sort of tentatively put them back in June, and I went, even in March, I went, I can't really see they're going to be June. So they're now tentatively back in now. There's a few back in sort of the October, November schedules, and I think even that it's not. It's going to be the last thing back, isn't it?
I had a few things rescheduled. Some of the first things that got cancelled for me, I had rescheduled to September, and I was very confident they'd go ahead. But in the last few weeks, I've been like, no, they won't. But you know what? Bloody love my new job. Absolutely. I love it, because by default, I am the funniest person there. And like the people that, my ma's worked there for 15 years. So I think the staff kind of know about me through her. So it's not like being the new girl at work. Everyone's like, it's Jackie's daughter. And I'm like, I have arrived. Hello. And I like chatting to people. So I think like I just sit in like my customers on the till, I'll chat to them. I do like, I answer the phones to sort out like deliveries for the old people and the vulnerable who can't go shopping, and they love to chat, and I love old people, so I have so many wonderful conversations. And then I get loads of people being like, you've been lovely to talk to, and I'm like, I think you're forgetting I'm lonely too, like I'm sat in an office with a bloody high vis jacket on, like, so I'm really enjoying it.
Do you get first dibs on the stuff that is difficult to get? Like, have you got lots of flour at home? That's the thing that still isn't in many supermarkets.
I start at 6 a.m. at the minute, so I'm quite tempted to like stockpile all the flour and then start a secondary flour business.
Definitely.
Yeah.
could make a lot. Soleros is what I'm not. I haven't been able to buy Soleros for about 2 months, and I was having a Solero a day. That was my treat, and so now my world's fallen apart. So I'm having four or five treats a day to make up for the lack of Soleros.
Balance it out,
and that's the result. So if you have any Soleros, put them aside for me.
You know where to send them,
and I'll pop up and I'll drive up and get them. I think that's allowed. It's a shopping trip. That's allowed. I'm sure
exactly.
That's how far on were you with your Edinburgh show? Had you written it?
I took last year off and sort of went and did like a one-off of the show the year before, which was called Peachy. And anyone who's physically watching, look, I've got peaches on my bed because I'm very basic but very on brand. And I sort of came back from Edinburgh, and because I hadn't done the full run at the festival, I was like, oh, I miss that. I miss like writing a show and being in front of people. So I started writing material in like September, October, did a preview in February and managed to fill the hour. And then I did about four or five previews across February, March. And I was like, this is going to be like, and when you've got that fire in your belly as a comedian, I'd had the year off, it reminded us why I love it, because I'd been able to have a step back from Edinburgh and all that chaos and be like, oh no, I do like doing comedy. I do love doing shows and I do love the Fringe. I just needed a little snooze from it, and I was really excited. So but ironically, my show was about loneliness.
Okay.
And it was called Party of One, which is now a deliciously ironic title now I've been dumped, isn't it? That's a one in hindsight. But I was really enjoying writing it, and I had that lovely feeling as I hope that all comics feel this, because my biggest worry as a comedian is that I'll stop loving doing it, or that I'll feel like bitter about it. And like, I never want to get like that, because this job means so much to me.
Yeah, you don't want to get bitter, it's awful.
So much. And that's why I'm pleased I had a year off, because I was like, oh, no, I do love it. I was just like tired of Edinburgh for a bit, and I felt so like excited. I had all these, like, I just felt so, I can't think of any other word other than excited. I was proper buzzing. That's it.
And I was like, well, that sounds like that will still work after Edinburgh and for the next Fringe.
Exactly.
If there is a next Fringe.
I know.
And if it doesn't all fold up as well. And, you know, I think that there must have been a lot. It's a real test of every relationship, right, this, because either you're separated from the person you're, you know, in a relationship
exactly.
with, and so many people are. Or you're not separated at all from
well,
them.
This is the
so
thing,
it's,
yeah.
It's a big test of love.
I feel like at least being separate, we've ended on good terms. Whereas if we maybe, say if we'd still been living together and it ended when we were living together, I don't think that would have ended well. No.
That's true.
I think I would have refused to leave the flat.
I think coming out of this single will be good. I think it'll be good, because I think there'll be, once it's absolutely all over, the whole of the world is going to turn into a massive party slash fuck fest. So it would be good to be a single, I think.
And you know what? Without sounding too, like, hippy-dippy or anything, or too, like, obviously I'm aware what's going on is horrible, so I don't necessarily feel good about the world, but I feel really fucking good about myself, because I've lost everything. Like, I'm fine. I promise I'm fine. I can't stress enough. But I have lost everything. So I've had to spend this time focusing on me, focusing on what I want, focusing what I want to do next. And what I've realised I want is, like, well, I suppose I realised it all along. I was like, I want to be up north. I love being up north. This is where I want to be. I don't want to be in London. I want to do comedy. I want to make people laugh. I'll do whatever it takes to get there. And you know what? I'm a brilliant person. And it doesn't matter if I'm on my own, because I'm like appreciating my own company and stuff. And I feel like I'm turning into this really like Lauren 2.0. I don't know if it's because maybe the blonde is growing out or something. Like, I've got blonde hair, but I haven't been to a hairdresser in months. And I feel like as the blonde grows out, like the true Lauren is coming back. And I'm like, yes, yeah, she is. She's going to be fine.
You've probably just got cabin fever and have gone mad. And once you come out of it, you'll realise what a bleak and terrible situation you're in. But it's good that for the moment you are full of delusion.
Feel delusion.
I think you have to. We've been so lucky in so many ways to have a life where something like this hasn't happened before.
And
where we haven't been seriously in a world war or anything in our lifetimes.
Exactly.
That may change.
Yeah. 2020, nothing could surprise me now.
Well, it's, you know, I think that things are going to be difficult, I think, for a good time, and maybe more than difficult. So it will, it will be interesting to see. But do you stay positive?
Exactly. And
you'll be safe in Newcastle. It'll be fine up there. Nothing bad's going to happen.
Yeah, we can fight it off. Fight it off.
It'll be fine. Right, look, I'll ask you some emergency questions. We did some for the badges beforehand, which were very funny. So let's see what we'll come up with. These are as used by the crew of HMS Invincible. So if you don't like them, I can have a nuclear strike. I won't do a Christmas one. That seems inappropriate. Okay, this is an interesting one. If you could travel back to medieval times, what single object would you take with you that would guarantee that you would be made queen / worshipped as a god?
Oh, I would take one of those micro pigs, like the take-up pigs. I would take a tiny little pig and just watch the like chaos unfold as this pig just grew to be like the size of the city. And they'd be like, who is this woman and this magic ever-growing pig? And then I would leave again and they wouldn't know what's...
But then you'd be the god of the society. You could change everything for the better.
There'd be a day named after me, and it would be Pig Day. And it would be the day a majestic, once blonde, now slightly stripy-haired woman arrived and brought bacon to the land.
Very good.
I think I am delusional, Richard.
I think you are, but that's good. I mean, I definitely am. You know, I mean, that's I sort of all the things I do that I've been doing in lockdown as well on here are all kind of playing with the idea of mental illness and breakdowns. I play myself at snooker at night and I collect stones in the morning. But I've been doing it for so long now that I just think, I was never quite sure whether I was really mad or not. But then actually to make it your whole life, you do get into that situation where it's difficult to work out whether you've crossed the line between.
Yeah.
Do you think that's the thing with comedians? I mean, we're sort of there's a pretense about who we are. Even if we're ourselves on stage, it's still a heightened version of ourselves.
Yeah.
But I think we play around a lot with the idea of madness and, you know, and misunderstanding things in a sort of insane way.
Yeah.
You know? And I wonder to what extent you start crazy or whether it drives you crazy. I think it's been fascinating.
Fine line, isn't it?
It is. But I've been fascinated by that, you know, by that distinction, because so much comedy does seem to be about, you know, aping or mocking mental illness in a way, not knocking down it, just the mental illness we all have in ourselves. So it's to something like this where you really are, I think, again, if you're solo, you've got your family around you, which is nice. I think, like, if people are just... It's sort of a bit like being in prison, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
It's like we've all been sent to prison. I did suggest in another podcast that we should all be allowed to commit a crime of the length of time we've been locked down. If you could do that, do you have a crime you would like to commit? It's about 3 months, so it's not, you can not much. You might get, if it's a first offence, you might get away with punching someone.
This is going to sound like the most pathetic crime ever, but I've always wanted to smash a window.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. That you wouldn't get more than 3 months for that.
I remember once being really angry at a flatmate for never washing his dishes. And I remember saying one day, like, if he doesn't wash them dishes, I'm just going to go smash one in the garden. And then he didn't, so I did. And I felt really bad, but he didn't notice because he never washed them, so he didn't notice one was missing. But, like, that just thrill of smashing something, I was like, this is a new thrill.
I reckon you should do that. Find out where your ex is living. Just go and throw a brick through the window.
We'll turn up to the supermarket tomorrow and just smash everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got a high-vis jacket. It's fine. It's approved.
It's her. It'll be easy to find. It's her. It's her in the high-vis jacket. You can put it on someone else and run away.
Exactly.
Good.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Is honesty the best policy? If not, what is the best policy?
Tact is the best policy.
Tact?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because
very good.
I think honesty is fine, but sometimes honesty can be delivered in a way that's very hurtful. So, yeah, like, you know, like, I feel like especially as, like, a woman, if I'm like, oh, I've had my hair cut and I think it looks shit. Do you agree? And like, you know that it looks shit, but what you want them to say is it doesn't look that bad or whatever, or to like soften the blow. But when someone's like, yeah, you look like a moose, it's like, well, no, you didn't have to say that, did you? Like, you could have been tactful. So I think tact is the best. I think I'm quite
tactful. And you're allowed to, does the tact allow you to lie, or do you still have to be honest with the tact?
You have to be honest, but in a way that's not like soul destroyingly hurtful. Like,
okay,
that would be nice.
So other things that I've got that I've... Well, there is a question about laminators. I'm not going to find it, but you've been working. I've seen
you
excited to work with a laminator.
Yeah, because I'm in the office answering the phone some of the time. I sometimes get little odd jobs to do, and I got asked to laminate things.
Yeah.
Second best day of my life, followed by getting a high-vis jacket.
I've got a laminator over there. I don't use it very much, but it's enjoyable when you do use it.
I very much enjoyed it.
What's the best thing you've laminated?
Well, I was laminating pictures of fruit, which was good. I enjoyed that. I think my favourite to watch was the banana, because it was like it was sort of being stretched coming out.
Yeah. Could you not just have laminated some fruit and put that there? That, was it to put in the shop? So, yeah. This is banana. You don't really need to do that, do you? You don't need to put a picture of a banana by some bananas.
We are northern. We do need help sometimes. Genuinely, I feel like such a stereotype. When I went on the checkout, obviously when you've got like loose vegetables, there's no barcode, so you search for it on the till. And what I have learned is, I don't know what a lot of vegetables are, Richard.
There are some complicated ones there, I have to say.
If you get served by me, everything's coming through as a carrot.
Well, that's good to know. That's good to know. And as long as the thing you're buying is more expensive than a carrot.
Yeah.
That's what you have to
do. That's your next podcast. Is it more expensive than a carrot?
Again, I noted from your Twitter that you're... You were sad to realise your 16 to 25 rail card
is
going to
go defunct. I've got it.
Is it gone defunct?
It's, what date is it? Oh my God, imagine if it's today. What date is it? Oh, it's tomorrow. It's the 4th of June. I expire. Oh. There I am. Look, this is me on my A-level results night. Look at that fringe.
That doesn't...
Sweepy, sweepy. But,
that doesn't look like you.
It expires tomorrow.
Wow, so you got one more chance to use it and you can't. You won't be able to use it.
Where can I go?
You're going to have to pay full price.
They've got 26 to 30 ones now.
Have they?
But I'm sad to see this one go. Served me well.
I could get 25% off any journey in the southeast with it. You get a network rail card, and any journey in the southeast is 25% off, something like that. It's only 30 quid a year. It's
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I don't use the train anymore now. I drive into London when I go into London. No one uses the train. This was another Twitter thing. I've been stalking you on Twitter.
Amazing.
You were giving examples of when everyone assumes that everyone in Newcastle knows each other, and
you're
trying to argue against it. But
it's annoyingly true. It really is. Yeah. So
can you remember the examples you gave?
There's one that I can't remember if I gave, but I'm also I can't remember. I'd not say that one, but there was one where one where my ex was like, oh, my family, some of my family live in Newcastle. And I was like, I bet you I know them. And he was like, oh, no, Newcastle's not that small. And it turned out his cousin was taught by my dad's best friend. So I was like, yes, I do know him. And then it was when I worked at the restaurant in London. They were like, oh, a Geordie girl used to work here. And I was like, oh, well, I guess I'm the new one. But then that Geordie girl came back and everybody was like, but you know each other. And we were like, that's actually really a rude thing to say. Like, how offensive that you just think all Northern people know each other. And then she turned up and I was like, I recognise you. And she was like, no, you don't. You're just saying it. It's the accent. Like, it's making you think of home. I was like, I recognise you. And I was like, what school did you go to? We didn't go to the same school. And then I was like, do you sing? And she was like, yeah, I'm a singer. And I was like, I've seen your band perform because my best friend dated the guitarist in your band. And she was like, no way. But yeah. And then there was a third one, but I can't remember what the third one was.
Do you think it's... I think it's a little bit to do with the fact that people in Newcastle get to know each other. Like in London, like that doesn't happen because you don't get to know anyone in London. Whereas if you live somewhere a bit more friendly or a bit smaller, you tend to, you know, socialise.
Absolutely.
And...
I've remembered what the third one was. I wasn't going to say it because I was like, I don't know if I can talk about that one because of who it's about. But I tweeted it, so it's fine. But it was somebody who I'd been flirting with since I've come back. Because I told you, strong, independent Lauren. Oh, you did a sassy little wiggle there. That was a treat for the watchers.
It didn't take long. It didn't take long.
You missed the treat there.
Oh, you're glad that ended.
But yeah, I started flirting with somebody.
Good.
And you know, like, obviously I feel like in London you're so used to being anonymous and like you can sort of flirt with anybody, talk to anybody, date anybody, and people might, you can live like as many lives as you want and people won't know. And then I went into work and one of the girls who I work with was like, the person you've been flirting with is my brother's girlfriend's her brother's girlfriend's brother is the person who I'd been flirting with. And I was like, Newcastle is so small. I've been back a few weeks. I've flirted with one person and we've already got a connection. This is...
Yeah,
it's very...
They're watching you and they know you've been flirting very overtly then if it's been spotted by other people.
Not that's
gotta,
just
you've got to play it cool.
It's in Newcastle. Right. Everyone's at each other's windows just looking out for like intruders and new people. And we see everything. But I think it's because we are chatty. So, like, we'll talk to people. Like, that's what I found when I first moved to London. And I tried to chat to someone who was waiting for, like, the tube. And they looked like I was mad. And I was like, oh, it just doesn't feel as friendly. Whereas, like, I'll talk to people at the bus stop all the time and stuff up here. And I think that's how you end up. Like, you'll see someone in the street and you're like, oh, that's Mary. And everyone's like, how do you know Mary? And I'm like, no, I picked up something she dropped once 8 years ago and now we're best friends. Like, that's it's very much the vibe in Newcastle.
Yeah. But look, hey, I mean, like, whenever I got dumped, usually.
Uh-huh. Usually.
Like, the first thing I did was I didn't go out and flirt with people. I went out and tried to, you've been in a relationship. Uh-huh. You've got to get out and try and get snogging some people. I know you can't do that now.
It's illegal, Richard.
Well, you could do it with some kind of sheet. You could do it without snogging. Put some kind of Perspex sheet up with a little hole in it. Work around that.
Oh, I never thought I'd be alive in a time where kissing is illegal.
Yeah, that is bad.
And also, this is the first year I've been single in a while, and it's also the first year Love Island's been cancelled, and I'm like, Love Island just wasn't ready for this potato in a bikini come stomping on in me Doc Martens being like, right, come on. Who wants to talk about Brexit?
So the other thing I wanted to talk to you about, which I don't think I talked to you about before, was you've done a lot of international gigs, I think. I mean, I know that's a lot of stand-ups do these various circuits around the world, but
I went everywhere.
It's a great thing in your 20s to get to travel the world.
Absolutely.
With your work.
Yeah, because as well...
Where have you been?
So I came back from Edinburgh in 2017. I went to India for 2 weeks, which was amazing. That's somewhere like I never thought I'd get to go. That was my first long-haul flight. So I'd never been on a flight longer than 2 hours. The furthest I've ever been in the world was Spain. So I didn't really understand how long a long-haul flight is. So I remember getting on the plane, and did we have to change? No, I think it was a straight through. But I was like, so how long's the flight then? Is it like, you know, 4 or 5 hours? And they were like, oh, Lauren, sit down. So it's like, what, like 12 or 14 hours or something? I'd never been on a plane that long. I'd never been jet-lagged. I was very confused. But I loved it. And the whole time, I just thought, this is mad. Because like, I think people think starting comedy when you're young is good, which it is. It totally is. Yeah. But also, like, I feel like, not to get the world's smallest violin out, but I feel like you get to miss a lot of stuff as well. So I didn't do all the like, oh, let's go traveling after uni, because I went to Edinburgh to try and get better at comedy and to make the connections. And I feel like I devoted everything to comedy. So I didn't get to do the girls' holidays and I didn't do the traveling. But then I got to do all that like while I was still young, but like for my job. So the whole time I was just like, all my stupid friends who saved to go traveling, what they should have done is grafted very hard in a comedy career and then been handed these opportunities. But India was amazing.
And when you're playing India, are you playing to local audiences or
expats? They were largely local, apart from Bangalore. There was one Irish guy in, I think. So that was quite nice. And then after there, I went to Istanbul, but I was literally there for a night. That was weird. And then I did all the Australian ones. So I went Perth, Adelaide, Sydney, Melbourne. Loved all that. And never thought I'd get to go to Australia. And then I went to New Zealand. Didn't even know what to expect there. The only thing, I've never actually pictured what that country's going to be like. And all I could think that is to do with New Zealand was Lord of the Rings, but I've also not seen Lord of the Rings. So I was like, I have no visual reference point. That was very fun. And where else have I been? Montreal, Canada. I love that.
Yeah, so did you do the Montreal Festival?
Brilliant. It was just for laughs. So and all that was in the space of about a year, from like September to July. And it was the best year of my life. I got to see places I never thought I'd get to see. Like, I ate some kangaroo. That was fun.
Yeah, I've eaten a kangaroo.
And like, and I just, as well, like, I did a lot of, obviously you're with other comics, but you spend a lot of time on your own as well. And the actual flying and stuff I did on my own. And I thought, I couldn't imagine a few years ago, like little shy, introverted, awkward Lauren being like, mate, in a few years, you're going to get on a plane on your own. You're going to go to the other side of the world. You're going to have the best time of your life. Like, it was so good. So good.
Cool. Yeah. Well, I wonder whether that, you know, it's everything we think, everything you're talking about, you kind of wonder, when will we be able to do those things
again?
That's
the thing. And I feel so lucky that I got to do it all, like, when I did. Because the best thing I did, I don't know if you've ever done it, is the roadshow in Melbourne.
No, I didn't do that, no.
So, like, that's run by the festival, but rather than just gig in Melbourne, you gig in all these little rural places, but because the country's so big, which again I didn't know, they split it up. So I did Victoria, and you're in a car with the other comics, and you go like a different place every night. So you like, you get in the car in the morning, you drive to a new city, you sort of go for dinner, you have a little explore, you do the gig, and then you're in the car the next day. But like, as someone, I always wanted to do, you know, the Camp America, like the summer camp stuff. I always wanted to do that, but again, it's in the summer, and I was doing Edinburgh, and it felt like I was on like summer camp or something, because I had a lovely bunch of comedians. I had Brennan Rees, I had Georgie Carroll. Have you met her?
No.
She's from Rochdale but lives in Adelaide. She used to be a nurse. Okay. And when you go to her shows, her audiences are like full of nurses. She's amazing. Right. So I was with her. Bob Franklin.
Yeah.
Okay, and this Australian guy who's really good called Ben Knight. I had a lovely group of comics, and like we did like escape rooms together in the day. And there was one place we went where it was this tiny little town with like, you know, like a motel, the gig venue, and not much else, but they had a bowling alley. And they opened the bowling alley for us after the show for just us, so we could go bowling. And then they apparently did it for last year's lot as well. And you sign a bowling pin. And that's like a new tradition that all the comedians who come sign this like bowling pin. And that was the best. Because I think like sometimes at the international comedy festivals, obviously they are really good fun, but sometimes not everyone wants to hang out and stuff. Some people want to do their own thing, which is fine. But because you're literally traveling in a car together, you get met a dog. I met two dogs.
Okay.
Oh, they were good days. I met two dogs. But I got to do all these activities. And like bits of Australia. If I'd just gone normal traveling to Australia, I would have done the whole like East Coast or like Melbourne, Sydney, whatever. But I was going to these tiny little places I'd never heard of. Like, it was so good. Like seeing real Australia. But there was one day we were in the car and I saw my first dead kangaroo at the side of the road. And I love animals. You probably gathered that from my Twitter feed. And I got really upset. And then like 10 seconds later, I saw another one. And by the time I counted about 23 dead kangaroos, the girl who was driving was like, Lauren, you're really going to have to stop counting every dead kangaroo you see, or this is going to be a long fucking trip. And I was like, I'm sorry. There are a lot of dead kangaroos.
And it wasn't one of those that you ate, though. When you ate a kangaroo, you didn't jump out.
I think that's why by the end of the trip, I was like, you know what? I've seen enough dead ones. I think I could eat one. Absolutely.
What did you think of the kangaroo? I like going to... I used to be vegetarian, but I like to eat every possible animal I can.
I felt a slight guilt for eating it, because I was like, oh, you're cute. Like, that's why I don't eat lamb. I'm like, oh, you're nice. But it was nice. It was all right. Very chewy, though. Like, it felt like an exercise to eat it. And I was like, I'm tired during my meal. It's not how it should be.
Ooh, crocodile? Did you eat crocodile?
I think my things have arrived. I just heard a noise. I'm getting my possessions back.
Oh, really? If you want to go down and get them, bring them up, we can go through.
No, that's the good thing about being back at home. I'm like, you do these things for me now, don't you?
Are they glad to have you back, your mum and dad? Are they?
But now I'm working. I think I've regressed a bit to being a child, because I like to think I'm quite independent. Like, I learned a lot from, well, obviously you all learn a lot from moving out, but like, I couldn't do anything for myself before I moved out. So I think they've seen a big change in this. But because I work with my mum now, definitely regressed being like that scared little kid, because a customer asked us a question I didn't know and I instantly panicked and I was like, who do I ask, who'll know the answer to this? And I just went, "Mom," like across the shop, "where's the stuffing?"
They probably think you own the supermarket if you're working there, your mum's working there.
That's like, for anyone who's like, I wonder which supermarket Lauren does work at, just next time you're in, listen, if you hear someone screaming for their mother, it's me.
I think you do, when I still regress, when we go, I mean, that's what I've written this various sitcoms about my family, but this show I write called Relativity is sort of all about, even as in your 40s and 50s, when you go back home, you sort of fall back into the relationships.
Yeah.
So when your brother, when my brother and sister are there as well, we just completely go back to being,
absolutely,
them being teenagers and me being, you know, 10 years old.
And I think at the minute as well, because of everything that's happening, like, I want to be looked after and I want to be comforted. So it's kind of nice to be back with my parents, because they do that now. And because I've not been home in so long, like, I think they naturally want to, like, mother us and comfort us and look after us sort of thing. So at a time when the world's so upside down, it's so nice to have somebody be like, do you want a cup of tea? Do you want the kettle on? Do you want a biscuit? Should I have some cheese and crackers? And I'm like, I love this. This is nice. Temporary, though. I couldn't stay here forever. No way.
Sure. And have you been doing any gigs online?
Have you tried that? They're weird, aren't they? They're very weird. Like, I like them. The best, I described it to someone the other day, it's like corn, you know, corn meat, like vegetarian stuff. I was like, it serves a purpose, but it's not as good as the real thing. That's very much how I describe. So, like, I find them enjoyable to a certain level, but I'm also like, but it is missing that real, you know, it's missing that real audience laughter. It's missing just the thing of, like, feeling the lights on you and being on. Like, I've been doing gigs from here, and even if I've really enjoyed myself, I'm like, at the end of the day, I'm still sat on my bed. Like, I'm still in my room. But I'm doing one in a comedy club next weekend.
Oh, yeah.
But with no audience.
Yeah.
I think I'll cry. I think I'll cry, being, because it's the stand as well, which means the world to me. And I think the second I step foot back in that place, I'll just be like, it's still here. Comedy never left.
Yeah, that is going to be weird. Yeah, I was offered one. I'm not sure, because I wasn't really doing stand-up. I've done about three, like, charity gigs in the last 18 months, and I've been doing this, you know, live versions of this and touring this. And I was offered, like, to do 50 minutes of a headline gig, like, sitting here doing comedy. I don't know if I could do 50 minutes, but, like, the idea, even if you're on top of your game, doing 50 minutes to nobody is.
I turned one down for a really similar reason and I felt awful. So, like, I've done a few, and I think my consensus is 5 to 10 minutes is best. Like, if you'd said that to me, like, if you've got the choice of in a live comedy club of doing 10 minutes or 20 minutes, I'd be like, 20 every time. I want more time to play and have fun and interact with people. But, like, the live gigs, I feel like 5-10 minutes works best just for, like, the context. And I got offered one by a venue I really liked, but it was 45 minutes. And I just thought, it's a TED Talk, isn't it?
That's a
TED Talk. And I like the venue too much to do a bad job for them. So I was like, I'd rather turn it down and it go to somebody who thinks they can do a good job of that than maybe, like, oh, I want the money, I'll do it, and then do a bad job. I'm too much of a perfectionist. I'm like, I care about comedy too much to not do my best, and I know that I couldn't do my best in that situation.
Interesting. I think it'd be very interesting, actually, you know, getting back on a stage even without an audience. I mean, I think that will make more sense and will feel, you know, I think just feeling like you're in the place, whether they can do it. And I know some people are doing, you're getting audience response a little bit, and you're hearing them on Zoom or whatever, but I mean, it's I sort of hope that once it's all over, comedy clubs will keep filming shows and live streaming shows and get extra revenue that way.
The best ones I've seen are the ones who are, like, sort of pre-playing sets that were recorded in the club, if you know what I mean. So I think Hot Water's been doing that in the Comedy Store, and I think Comedia as well have interspersed like sort of live things like this with pre-recorded. And I'm like, that's really good, because obviously you're still getting the live, because there's laughter there from the night.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, I don't know about you, but I've seen so many or a few people be like, I wonder if all these people in lockdown know what that this is like for people who are housebound and stuff. And I was like, well, wouldn't it be nice to, if there's one thing we can take from this, it's how do we make the things that we've missed, like, oh, going to comedy and being able to watch comedy or theatre or gigs or whatever, how do we make sure people who this is their life forever, how can they get to experience that stuff as well?
Or just people with kids or anything. Yeah. You know, just like, it's so difficult to get out. So if you've got two young kids, going out for an evening is like a huge thing. You've got to get babysitters, you've got to do this, do that. And so all these things like the National Theatre putting on some shows like early on, you know, just some recorded shows. You're going to go, oh, we'll watch that. Because, you know, we watch TV. You can watch TV, but that's basically all you do as a parent. So to have that opportunity, I don't know. I think there's just a big audience out there, and it could actually, my worry is the clubs are going to go down, right? So I think the comedians should all be able to scrabble their way through, except the real drug casualty ones who've never worked doing anything else for 30 years. They'll pass away through hunger and exhaustion. But everyone will be able to scrabble through and find a way to make a living, I think. But if we come back and there are no clubs, then that's a big, big
scary
problem. Or if the little, you know, the clubs that are closed will be the little clubs.
Yeah.
And those are the clubs that you know, like, you needed those clubs to get to the place you're at now. And then now you're working in the bigger clubs and touring the world. But if you hadn't had the little clubs there, you wouldn't have, you know, and nor would I.
And this is what I've been saying to people as well. I'm like, there's so much talk about, like, after this, support your local pub or, like, shop local. And I agree with all those things, but I'm like, yeah, and also support your local comedy club and your local arts centre and your local, go have a meal at an independent local restaurant, have a drink at a local pub, go to your local comedy club and just support the bit where you live. Definitely.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll be able to, and hopefully most things will survive. We'll get through it. It's a concern, I have to say, but yeah, I think there's lots of positive things to come out of it, and you know, it's great that you're being so positive about it. I think there's two different types. I mean, there's more than two different types of comedians, but there are very much that kind of very positive, you know, go for it. Whatever happens, I'll keep pushing through. And there is that more negative and more morose kind of comedian who I think will be really struggling through this, because it's, you're not getting the endorphins of performing.
Yeah.
And that's a drug. If you're not in any other kind of drugs, that's a drug.
I think the reason I've been so positive is because it's made us realise how much I genuinely love and miss it. But I think that can go one of two ways. That can either make you really sad, or it can put a bit of fire in your belly and be like, well, I'll do whatever it takes and I'll wait however long to be able, and the moment I can do it again will be so special. So I'm not normally this positive about anything other than dogs and high-vis jackets. It's a new lease of life for me. I'm quite enjoying it.
Well, that's good. And I know I did, I don't know if it ever went out, but I did, we talked about it last time you were on, but I did that show, that podcast with you for BBC Sounds.
I don't know what happened to that.
I don't know what happened.
No.
Our advice wasn't good enough.
We learned about mortgages, didn't we?
We did. It was very exciting for me as well. are you getting work like that? Are you doing more podcasting stuff?
Yeah, so we do one, me and my friend Aaron, who works for Dave, and he's an ambassador for Calm. We're doing a mental health podcast, and then obviously when lockdown hit, we decided to do some like sort of isolation episodes about like surviving in lockdown and keeping like sane in lockdown, and I think that really helped as well. I've been enjoying doing those. What else have I done? I don't know. I work a lot. Very, very happy.
That's good. Let me ask a couple more emergency questions, and then I'll let you get back to looking to see if your things have broken on the journey up.
Yeah.
Let me have a look. Like I could go. Let's go early. Let's go early on. I don't ask the early questions very much. Seeing you're single, I could ask you, would you rather date? I've got to get the question. Would you rather date a man who is a 6-foot-tall penis or a man who, instead of having a penis, has a tiny man down there instead?
Tiny man.
You'd go for the tiny man?
Well, I'm only 5'3".
Yeah.
So, like, I wouldn't want to walk around with a willy that's bigger than me. No.
No
way. Okay. That'd be intimidating. And like, whereabouts on the willy would my head be? Because I think it's 6 foot.
5 foot 3. I mean, you'd just be down. You'd be below the helmet.
I'd be right in the middle of both bits. Like, no, that's a world of spells, isn't it? No.
I guess.
But little tiny.
I mean, no offense to 6 foot tall penis men who don't all smell. A tiny man. So
not
he's...
all 6 foot penis men.
A tiny man is a sentient being in his own right as well. So you've got your two for the price. What if you don't like the person it's attached to? That's the danger, though. What if you fall in love with either the penis or the man, but you don't like the other one?
That's one of life's great
that's
problems.
That's why it's better to just be in a monogamous relationship rather than attempt a sort of Siamese. It's not quite a Siamese twin situation, but almost.
Close enough.
I think I asked you about ghosts last time you were on.
Yes, I remember that.
You thought you had seen a ghost, yeah. Let me ask you. What do you think happens when we die? What do you think?
I don't believe... Well, weirdly, because I said I've seen a ghost, but I also don't believe there's anything after. I think it's a big old snooze.
Yeah, just that's it. It's all over.
I used to love, though, listening to... we've got this radio station up here called Metro Radio, and like, I don't know if there's any Geordie people watching or listening, but you will know Alan Robson, who is like a local DJ radio presenter up here, and he presented the show called Night Owls, and he did a lot of like ghost hunts as well. And I used to listen to the show like religiously when I was a kid, and he would do regressions, you know, you take people back and I got obsessed with listening to that and wondering like what my former life would have been or who I was in a previous life. But I don't think either I've not been anyone in a previous life or I was someone so fucking boring that I haven't recalled any of those memories.
Well, you can't. It's a sort of weird thing because why would you do it if you don't remember? If you have no memory of it, what's the point of it, really?
Exactly.
Even if the memory is repressed in there somewhere.
Yeah.
There was a thing in the paper there, on the news website the other day about a guy who'd briefly been in a coma, and when he woke up, he could speak fluent French, he'd done French for at school or something, but it'd been some while since he'd done it. And for a few minutes, he could speak fluent French. But also, his family from a few generations ago were from Normandy, so there was a theory that information somehow it gets into your DNA, which might be true because it's kind of freaky the way kids learn to speak any language.
They look it up, don't they?
Yeah. But, you know, you'd think if there was some kind of residual half-memory within DNA, I don't think there is, though.
I've been trying to learn Spanish during this on, you know, one of those language learning apps.
Yeah.
Not going well because I complete a lesson and I'm like, I am fluent. And then I redo the lesson and I'm like, I retained none of this.
Yeah, I find languages is my worst. I was good at school, but languages were my... I liked Latin, but you didn't have to speak it.
Yeah.
Speaking languages was my absolute worst thing, and I couldn't face it.
I've been getting really wound up because obviously I've got the accent, so like I can do that, I can read it and I can like write it, but then, you know, sometimes it asks you to speak it, but I can't speak with any other accent other than this, so I'm like, la quinta por favor, and it's like, sorry, that was incorrect, and I'm like, what was written down? But apparently Duolingo doesn't accept Geordie Spanish for you to pass their modules.
Yeah, I think at the beginning of lockdown, people had a lot of hopes about the amazing things they could get done.
Yeah.
And it was all that like fitness thing at the start. I think hardly anyone has kept up the fitness. Everyone's put on a stone. There's going to be a big thing. There's going to be lots of drinking. There's lots of screwing, lots of orgies, and lots of whatever we were just talking about. Now I've got distracted by orgies. I forgot what we were saying.
Fitness, Richard.
Fitness. Which is sort of orgy as well.
Yeah.
It's going to be the roaring 20s. We're going to have a great time.
Amazing.
But it'll be 2022, I think, before that happens.
Oh, absolutely.
But you'll have a great time. I won't. I'll have the same time as I'm having at the moment, which is a great time with my lovely wife who might be watching downstairs.
Lovely disclaimer there.
You might see it. Hey, look, it's been really lovely to see you again. I'm so glad you are saying so positive. It's terrific. And well done for... pushing on through in all these various ways. I'd ask you when we're going to see you again, but we don't know when we're going to see you on stage again. But
more likely to see us in the supermarket.
I probably will.
Scanning everything through as a carrot.
Put some Solaris back for us. Learn your vegetables. Before you learn another language, learn your vegetables.
Is there an app for that?
Good luck with everything. I'm sure it's going to all be fine.
Oh, and, thank you.
I'll let you get back to your possessions. But thank you very much. For you at home, if you come back at 10 o'clock, I'll be talking to Bill Burr. So why not tune in for that? But thank you very much for the moment. Ladies and gentlemen, Lauren Patterson! Yay. Thank you very much. And we'll see you soon. Goodbye. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Lauren Patterson. Thank you to Pest for continuing to provide the wonderful music. Thank you to everyone at Acast, everyone at Twitch, and everyone at the British Comedy Guide, and to Chris Evans, not that one, who has provided invaluable assistance in getting all this stuff together. I'm indebted to my executive producer, Harsharan Harsh Singh. We used to say his notes were a little bit harsh, what we said on the set. It made us laugh because his name is Harsh, and actually they were very harsh notes. He really picked the whole thing to pieces, if I'm honest. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Go to GoFasterStripe.com/badges, become a monthly badger. You can help us out by going to GoFasterStripe.com and buying emergency questions, books or Trump cards. And very shortly, we will be launching a couple of Kickstarter campaigns for snooker and stone clearing, which will also provide us money to go towards making even more content for you, because we like you. What's your fucking problem? We like you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Richard Herring download and book needs. Go to RichardHerring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.